Groves startles me. I shove my food back in the bag and cross to the edge of the grove. Fear spirals through me when I see who's thundering closer to me. It's not the other agents. It's the horny-faced sergeant, and he's aiming right for me. I slink back into the shadows, but I can hear him galloping up the hill. I run back to Dickinson, but just as I'm mounting, a deep voice stops me in my tracks.
You! You waited for me, didn't you, little minx?
I freeze and turn slowly to face him. His coppery eyes gleam in the shadows, bright as a wolf's. He smiles at me, his canines flashing.
All alone now? I thought I smelled a lady's scent in the grove as I patrolled again.
I blink demurely. My brother and the rest were chasing a large red stag. I was slowing them down. They should be back soon. His smile is predatory and chilling.
Not too soon, I hope.
He dismounts from his horse and prowls close to me, the wind catching in his dark hair.
You are familiar, of course, with the rites of a fey knight.
My mouth goes dry. No, I'm not familiar with the rites of a fey knight, but I can guess it's something about taking whatever women they want. In the hollows of my mind, my thoughts are screeching at me to run or to fight. I think of my knives, one in the boot, one on my belt, and a sharpened hairpin tucked in my locks. He won't expect me to attack him. I'm fast, and I can almost hear Vivienne. You'll never be strong enough or fast enough to stab a large, trained man. Never. Then what should I do? Fight him with everything you have. Imaginary Vivienne shouts at me. And what do I have? I'm good at understanding what people want, what they need. Raphael pointed that out to me. I show people the version of me they want to see, but I need to work on making it convincing. Already, I've intuited that he likes innocence. Raphael told the sergeant my father wanted to keep me safe, and that sparked something in his eyes. He wants a pure, untouched woman, a shrinking violet. In that case, I'll give him the opposite of what he wants. Of course I know the rites of a fey knight. I smile at him. I've been with many, and some squires. He frowns.
What?
At least I think they were knights and squires. It's not like I asked for the official paperwork. I shrug. A man is a man. I move closer to him and touch my lips. But I really should be more careful. One of them had something. I think it's called trench mouth. His nose wrinkles.
I see.
I learned all sorts of tricks from a brothel in Wise. I touch the side of his face, grinning maniacally. Triggered by my anxiety, the voice in my head starts clamoring.
You're dirt, a disgrace, disease. Get back, get back.
I try to ignore the hallucinations, keeping my face still and the smile on my lips. The sergeant's face twists in disgust as I gently run the tips of my fingers down his cheek. The voice keeps screeching.
You're disgusting, just like that whore in Oliver. I slit her throat.
I blink, the sentence disconcerting me, but it goes on.
Oliver will be a bloodbath again tonight after the ambush, if that traitor Varys can be believed.
The sergeant's lip curls.
You're disgusting, just like that whore in Oliver.
I yank my hand away, startled. He'd just said the words out loud that I'd heard in my mind. Cold anger etches his face. He looks furious, violent. My instincts are telling me to get the hell away from him as fast as possible, especially since he apparently slit the last whore's throat. Well, I suppose that's too bad, I blurt. I'll have to find another man to satisfy my needs. Panic tightens my chest as I take a quick step back and rush to mount Dickinson. I spur him on and he lurches to a gallop through the grove. I cling to his reins as we race between the trees. I'm not exactly sure where I'm going, only that I need to get away from the sergeant. A low branch thrashes at my face as Dickinson thunders toward the road. His hooves pound on the dirt, kicking up dust around me. I focus on the earthen road as we gallop, the wind shrieking in my ears. I've never ridden a horse so fast, but I'm charging along the road that Raphael took earlier. I glance back to where we came from, the border with unoccupied France. In the distance, the veil shimmers with pearly light. I can't return to the meeting point. Raphael told me I should get back through the veil and wait on the other side, but something stops me.
Oliver will be a bloodbath again tonight after the ambush, if that traitor Varys can be believed.
I don't know anyone called Varys, and it's strange for my mind to conjure unknown names. But Oliver is where Raphael and the rest of the group are headed. What if I'm not just hearing random voices? An idea takes root in the hollows of my mind. I heard his words before he said them out loud. The exact phrase. You're disgusting, just like that whore in Oliver. the voice in my thoughts, then out of his mouth. In the past, things the voices told me sometimes turned out to be true. Once a voice whispered to me that the bookshop manager was having an affair with one of the other employees. Then I accidentally walked in on them in the office, his pants pulled down to his ankles, his pale butt thrusting back and forth. Another time, my mind conjured a voice about a customer in the shop, something about stealing books, two very expensive books. Special editions signed by the author. Then I caught him stealing them, trying to run straight out the front door. So what if what I've heard wasn't just nonsense conjured by a stressed mind? What if it was magic that I shouldn't dismiss? Because if my voices can predict the future, there might be a bloodbath scheduled tonight in Aliver. It's a small fey village built on the ruins of a town after the invasion. Aliver is centered around a train station, some shops and farms, and the tavern where Raphael is supposed to meet the contact. But it's not a big city. Most of the French abandoned it during the war. The ambush. Was that planned for Raphael and the MI-13 agents? I'm not sure how to get a message to Raphael. Even if I race after them on horseback the entire way, I'm hours behind. They'll get to Aliver within the hour, maybe less. There's no way I can catch up with them. All I can do is... The train of Cabanos. It goes through Aliver. That's the second stop in the occupied zone, arriving from the south. The Seneschal made us memorize the maps of this region and also commit the whole train schedule to memory. There's a train leaving the border station at midnight, reaching Aliver at 1 a.m. I steer Dickinson West, heading for the train. As I ride, I pull out my pocket watch and my pulse roars. I've got 10 minutes to get there. I spur on my horse, shouting words of encouragement as he gallops. Apparently, he's relieved to find that his timid rider has grown more daring, and he seems to relish the fast run across the road. Now his hooves hardly touch the ground. One thing is clear, the riding lessons at Avalon are paying off. The wind tears at my hair, and I lean over Dickinson's neck, urging him to run faster. The dirt road carves through cornfields, and I race through a derelict village. Wooden shutters bang in the breeze, but in the distance, I see the flickering warmth of gas lamps. Balconies hang over the street, and the windows are barred to the night. A clock tower rises high above the town, and when I glance at it, my breath catches. The bells chime 12 times. Midnight. In the distance, I hear chugging and groaning along tracks. Steam billows, and my heart sinks. I've missed it. I'm gasping, trying to catch my breath. My chest tightens, but I urge Dickinson on, and we race to the station. The building is stone, painted white. Someone shouts at me from the platform, but my eyes are on the train. An open field runs alongside it. Gripping Dickinson's reins, we race to catch up. The train of Cabanos is enormous, with a black and crimson engine. Billows of steam burst into the air above it, and the mist snakes around the train. I've never seen a train like this, one with shimmering cars that gleam with silver and gold. Others so dark they seem to suck in all the light around them. How many train cars? 30? 40? Impossible to count. Dickinson gallops faster and my chest thuds at the sight of a boulder in our way, but the horse is already leaping high above it, and for a second it almost seems like we're flying, and then we drop. I bite my tongue as we hit the ground and taste blood. But we've reached the train, and I'm about 5 carriages from the rear. It's accelerating now, so I can't waste another moment. All of this seems mad. An impossible feat the old Nia would never even dream of doing. My heart is in my throat as I lean toward the rungs on the side of the train. I try to clutch at a ladder jutting out of a carriage, my fingers brushing it, but it's already gone. The carriage moves ahead. I've got 4 more cars before I've lost it. I manage to grip the next one, but my feet catch in the stirrups. I lurch free and nearly fall off the horse. I've almost lost my chance now, and Dickinson is spooked. He veers sideways, distancing us from the train. No, no, no! Come on, Dickinson! I yell, pulling him toward the train again. 2 more carriages, but I don't reach out. I let the penultimate carriage go ahead as I free my right foot from the stirrup, then the left. I'm gripping the saddle with one hand, wondering if I'm about to die. Last carriage. I swing my hand and grab a rung. The force of the train yanks me off my mount. My breath stops, as for a few seconds, I dangle above the ground. Then I manage to grab the rung with my second hand and put my feet on the bottom rung. Clinging, shaking, I look back. Adrenaline courses through me. Dickinson is already dozens of yards away, staring after me. And I'm on the train of Cabanos, hurtling deep into Fey France. Exactly as Raphael told me not to do. Chapter 16. The wind shrieks in my ears and yanks at my hair. As I cling for dear life to the ladder, the train pistons chug beneath me. I can't stay like this, hanging off the train. If the Fae spot me, I'll instantly be recognized as a spy. I glance down at the earth speeding beneath my feet. I need to force myself to climb up. In the whipping wind, it's hard to convince myself to let go. My muscles agree and are locked rigid. Finally, I force myself to unclench my left fist. Almost instantly, I feel myself veering off to the right, buffeted by the wind and the train's rattling pace. I grasp at the next rung on the ladder, and then, with a quick upward shift, move my right hand as well. Fear cascades through me as I climb one rung at a time. From above, a burst of hot steam washes over me, taking my breath away. At the bookshop, I often climbed the ladder to reach shelves all the way at the top, but the ladder wasn't juddering in a windstorm like this, assailed by bursts of hot steam, and I didn't have to worry about certain death if I fell. Fear rakes at my chest. Another rung, and another. At last, I reach the top of the carriage, clinging to the metal bars to steady myself. Beneath me, the train rattles over the tracks, turning fast. Desperately, I search for a way inside the carriage. There's nothing. The carriage's roof is solidly shut. But then I notice a trapdoor. Unfortunately, it's on the next car over. I grip the rungs on the roof tightly as the train races through a darkened village. With a hammering heart, I crawl across the carriage roof, flattening myself on the smooth surface. Then, on my hands and knees, I shift forward, grabbing for any handholds I can find, metal braces and brackets on the roof to stop me from falling. The train tracks turns before I can grip a bracket, an almost insignificant bend, but for me, gravity shifts, and I tumble to the side, hands scraping desperately for purchase. I start to slide off the left side of the train, and then my fingertips brush something solid, a bar jutting from the roof. Grunting, I pull myself to the center of the carriage again, and the train chugs on. Gritting my teeth, I crawl a few feet more to the edge of the carriage. My stomach swoops at the sight of the gap between the cars and the ground racing by beneath the train. The chasm yawns before me. Between the carriages, the rails flash by with impossible speed. There's only one way across. I have to jump. And if I fall, I'll be crushed to a pulp beneath the train. My pulse thunders. Steam billows around me. I gasp, inhaling it, and the acrid taste fills my mouth. The steam drenches my clothes, mingling with my sweat. When it clears up, I force myself to crouch at the edge, and then I shuffle back a few steps. Before I can second-guess the wisdom of my decision, I take a running leap. Time seems to slow as I hurtle through the air, the wind rushing over me. I'm certain I've made a terrible mistake, but I land with a jarring thump on the next carriage, my jaws snapping at the impact. The train whistle blows, the sound so loud that it rattles through my bones. Reaching for one handhold at a time, I make my way to the trapdoor. When I get to it, I yank the handle. The trapdoor is metal and ridiculously heavy. Groaning, I heave it open a crack and peer inside. Not a passenger carriage, thank the gods, just cargo. Moonlight streams into piles of crates around the edges of the carriage. I let out a huff of frustration. There's no ladder. I'll have to jump. But the carriage floor looks far away. I open the hatch further and hang my feet over the edge. I inch inside and let go, then plummet to the floor of the cargo car, pain shooting through my ankle and up my leg. Shit, I hiss, stumbling to the side. I've twisted my ankle badly. I roll onto my butt and grip my leg. If only Raphael were here to work his healing magic. I can almost picture him cradling my ankle in his hands, stroking his fingertips over exactly where it hurts, the heat from his magic pulsing over my skin. But when I stop imagining it, the pain races back through my leg. My heart is a wild beast. I let out a long, slow breath. I'm resting on the quiver and arrows, and they dig into my back. I'm dirty and wet, and I've torn my pants. My face burns and feels sticky, and when I wipe my forehead, my fingertips come out smeared maroon. Drying blood. I think I cut it when I was racing through the branches in the grove. Oh, and I bit my tongue. I have the quiver, but I lost the bow on the way. Still, despite the injured ankle,
This is overall a success. I'm alive and on the way to Alivur. Fuck. My elation dies when I realize that I've lost my bag, too, which had my forged papers in it. If anyone asks for them, I'm screwed. The disguise no longer makes any sense. Once I get off in Alivur, my appearance will draw instant attention. I look around, searching for anything that might be a change of clothes, but all I see are crates nailed shut. On either side of the carriage, there's a door, but there's no way of knowing what's beyond it. Rhythe taught us that the train of Gobanos is a strange hybrid of human technology and fey magic. Once inside, perceptions can become strange to those not used to magic. Carriages are glamored, or twisted into strange shapes as magic bends reality to its will. It can be dangerous to venture into the unknown, especially now that I look more like a fugitive than an aristocratic fey hunter. I crouch down in the carriage and wait. Hopefully I'll go unnoticed in here until I get to Alivur. I unshoulder the quiver and stuff it behind a crate. As the train chugs along, I lean back and shut my eyes, trying to ignore the pain in my ankle. Have I made a terrible mistake? Rushing onto a fey train because I heard a voice that might or might not predict the future? It's certainly possible. When the mission ends, assuming I get home safely, I could be kicked out of the academy and on the next boat back to the U.S. The instant pang of sadness catches me by surprise. My life before Camelot was a different sort of chaos, one that made me feel tired instead of exhilarated. One where I spent lots of time alone. No Tana, no Serana, no Darius, no Raphael. Not that I care about him. I drop my head into my hands, trying to focus on the next step. I'm still in mortal danger. I'll deal with the fallout of my actions later. The carriage door opens and my head snaps up, pulse roaring. A blonde fae steps inside, frowning. He's wearing a black uniform and holds a short sword, but even I can see that he's untrained, holding it as if he's holding a club. I stumble to my feet, standing unsteadily. He cocks his head at me, and his bronze eyes gleam in the dark, lupine and eerie.
Who are you?
In the dim light, I can see the suspicion etched on his face. I can only imagine how I look to him. Dirty, bleeding, clothes ripped. I look exactly like a fugitive. My heart speeds up. He'll take me into custody. In less than an hour, I'll be locked in a fey jail being tortured for answers. My mind flashes to something I learned in one of my spy classes. Alleviating suspicion is a difficult task, but shifting it is much easier. You just need someone else to point a finger at. Unfortunately, there's no one here but me. Someone attacked me, I say in fey. I think he was a demi-fey, a stowaway. He tenses, peering behind me.
Where?
I think he's hiding in the rear carriage.
Stay here,
he commands, and walks between the crates to a door behind me. He readies his sword, then opens it, stepping into the darkness of the last carriage. But from here I can see it's also empty of people, which isn't ideal. My breath shallows. I need to get out of here now. I run for the other door. Pushing through it, I burst into a passenger carriage. Fey dine at tables, sipping drinks and eating hors d'oeuvres. I've never seen so many Fey at once, and they're all looking at me. Champagne flutes paused in midair. My chances of blending in are now zero. There's a criminal on the train, I shout, pointing back at the door. A demi-fey murderer! He stabbed someone in the back carriage! Help barricade the door! Shouts echo off the carriage walls as I hobble across the carriage. With every step, pain screams from my twisted ankle up my calf. When I glance behind me, I see two fey men holding the door closed. I take in the strange beauty of the place as I shuffle along. The fey are draped in rich fabrics of burgundy and royal blue. In this carriage, vines grow over ornately carved wooden walls, and lights twinkle from the leaves. Music floats through the air. But as I get closer to the end, a woman with a tiara and crimson hair points at me, shouting, "Stop her!" No one is really listening to her. They're all focusing on the other end of the train, where the alleged murderer is pounding maniacally against the door. Good. Chaos is my friend. I limp along as quickly as my ankle allows me to. Just as I reach the carriage door, I look back. The barred door rattles, and the attendant shouts something from the other side. I slip through into the next carriage, slamming the door shut behind me. It's another passenger car,
full of vase sitting among the luxury of gilt-frame portraits and ivy-covered walls. I play the same trick, with less satisfying results this time. I scream that a killer is after me and yell at them to bar the door. While I hobble across the aisle, a single fey man with silver hair makes a half-hearted attempt to question me, but I pretend not to hear him. I burst through the next door, agony shrieking up my leg. I'm prepared for the extraordinary, but the sight in front of me still stops me dead for a few precious seconds. The carriage is decorated like a ballroom, and I've wandered into an actual masquerade ball. There are no tables or benches, and fey dance in long gowns and animal masks. Lights twinkle on the mahogany walls, and a harp thrums, a pulsing sensual beat that throbs in my belly. Tiny jewels hang suspended in the air, glittering with light that reflects off a marble floor. The space appears to be cavernous, the dimensions all wrong for a train. I limp inside, and some of the dancers glance my way, but almost no one stops dancing. Despite the pain in my leg, I feel the strange need to dance as well, and the music and the magic of the masquerade ball takes over my body. This place is wildly disorienting. Euphoria bubbles in my chest and slides through my veins, and I have to force myself to remember that I need to get to the other side of the carriage. I pirouette through the dancers. Giggling, I snatch a cat mask off a woman's face. She grins at me, her lips blood red. I don the mask and dance my way to the next door. My ankle throbs, but the pain is so dull now. I'm acting out the moves from my childhood. A few steps of the waltz, now an allemande, a chassis. I land badly on my bad ankle and lose my balance. I hiss in pain and stumble into the carriage door. Snapping out of my haze, I look back at the ballroom. Two black-clad guards are searching for me among the dancers. With my cat mask still on, I slip through the next door. In the next carriage, violet smoke whirls around fey in skimpy outfits. They recline on cushions, their limbs entwined. Some are smoking long cigarettes, others are kissing and groping one another. The smoke is cloying and sweet, and I hold my breath, but not quickly enough. Dream smoke, it's called, a fey drug that has become very popular with the human elite for the past years. I glance at a man sucking on a woman's nipple. I find myself staring, the dream smoke relaxing my muscles. My head spins, and I try to keep my balance, licking my lips as heat slides through my body. My eyes close, and I sway, imagining Raphael's magic caressing me, that he's right behind me, his athletic body pressed against mine. For a moment, my mind blazes with a vision of me lying on that cushion, of Raphael kissing my naked skin. Absolutely not. I clench my fists and force myself through the carriage as quickly as I can. I reach the next door and fling it open. It's dark in here, and I collapse on the floor, kicking it closed behind me. I can breathe. The rush wreaked havoc with my asthma. I search for my inhaler, except I no longer have my bag. Shit. A sudden growl draws my attention. The carriage is full of caged animals. Great wolves with gleaming eyes, foxes, a giant bell jar of fluttering butterflies. Ravens perch in cages. One of the wolves growls again, his eyes intent on me. I quickly glance at the cage door, relieved to see it's locked. I've still got two agents after me, though. Perhaps the smoke has slowed them, but for how long? I have to keep moving. Forcing myself upright, I hobble between the animal cages. My breath whistles and my chest feels heavy. The fey chasing me don't suffer the same affliction. I can go on for one more carriage, maybe two, and they'll be upon me. Pain lacerates my ankle, but I make it to the other door. I glance at a caged wolf to my right, one with gray fur. His lip curls back, bearing enormous teeth. "Hey there," I wheeze, leaning on my knees. "Hello." He growls, his ears flicking back. I don't think I'm making a new friend here. The lock seems simple. Obviously, there's no reason for a complicated lock on a feral wolf's cage, because what sort of maniac would want to open it? I recently learned in the academy that picking locks takes two tools, a bent lockpick and a strong metal prong for torque. Gasping for breath, I remove the brooch from my corset and break the pin holding it. Then I yank the thin hairpin from my hair and stick it into the lock. The wolf snarls at me, saliva dripping from his fangs. He snaps at my hand and I quickly pull it back. I push the cat mask up on my head in case that placates him. Stop that. I order. I need to concentrate. His low growl sends a shiver up my spine. I push the hairpin into the lock again and apply pressure as I start tinkering with the pin. I feel the slight click and twist the lock open. Behind me, the door opens and a guard shouts something at me. I stand up and open the cage just a sliver. The wolf, recognizing the opportunity, lunges against the door of the pen as I yank the door open to the next carriage. I slide through, slamming it behind me. I flatten myself against the door as something heavy, probably the wolf, smashes into it. Luckily, wolves aren't good with door handles. Then, from the other side of the door, I hear a deep, male scream. A little tendril of guilt twists in my chest. My pursuers just met my lupine acquaintance. Pressed against the door, I survey the new carriage. This seems to be a luggage carriage, lined with shelves of suitcases. My mind kicks into action, and I snag a dusty rose valise from one of the shelves. I pop it open and strip off my dirty, torn clothes. Panicked shouts echo from the other carriage. I pull on a long emerald dress with a plunging neckline and a slit up one side. I yank out a wide-brimmed hat and put it on. With shaking hands, I quickly secure the knife holster around my thigh. I shove my clothes in the suitcase and slam it shut. I hurry across to the next door and fling it open. Another passenger carriage, one with mahogany tables and flickering candelabras, where the occupants are drinking bubbly pink cocktails from champagne flutes. I stroll in, masking the pain that races up my ankle. Wearing a serene smile, I drop into an empty seat at one of the tables, angling my hat to cast a shadow on my face. A woman with wavy silver hair sits across from me, and her eyes gleam with fiery shades. "Good evening," she says to me in Fae. "Good evening," I answer. "Do you know how long until we reach Aliver?" "Not long," she frowns. "You have a bit of an unfamiliar accent, young one." "I'm from Glenfark," I explain, hoping that it's far away enough to explain the foreign accent. It's a remote island in Broceliande. "Ah," she nods in satisfaction. "I should go there when I return from Fae France. I've heard it's quite beautiful." "It's glorious," I say. "There's nothing like the sandy white shores of Glenfark." The carriage door bursts open and the large guard steps in. There's only one of them now, and he has a nasty scratch on his face. This guard hasn't seen my face, because I was wearing the cat mask. He's looking for a dirty woman with wet clothes. "My son sailed to Glenfark once," the lady says. "He was there for 4 days. He said that he liked the fruit." She's wearing a golden gown with sheer sleeves. "Yes, Glenfarkian fruit is delicious. I have no idea what fruit grows in Glenfark." The attendant walks down the aisle looking left and right. His eyes linger on me for just a second, then slide off. I do my best to look as relaxed as possible. He keeps going. As he gets further away, I start coughing. "Are you all right, dear?" the woman asks. "Yes," I rasp. "It's just the fumes of the train. They don't agree with me." "Here," she rummages in her small black clutch, finding a tiny metal box. "Try one of those." I open the lid to reveal pastel-colored sweet confections. Fae candy can be overwhelming, but refusing a gift in the Fae world is culturally unthinkable. "Thanks." I cough and pop a pale blue sweet in my mouth. Strong minty flavors erupt, curling into my throat and nose. I can practically feel my breath relaxing and my lungs opening up. "It's good, isn't it?" she smiles at me. "Helps me on bad days." "It's incredible," I manage. "This is a million times better than my inhaler. Modern medicine has a lot to learn from the Fae." The brakes screech and the train slows. A man's voice floats through the carriage. "Oliver, we have arrived at Oliver." My gaze flicks to the large guard. He's not paying attention to me, but he's standing by the door where I need to disembark. Through the opening, I see a stone platform. Gas lamps cast a warm glow over a few people as they bustle off the train. "Didn't you want to get off on Oliver, young one?" the silver-haired woman asks. "Yes," I smile at her, my heart beating hard, my eyes still on the guard, just catching my breath. I wait for a few seconds, then stand up and walk over to the train door. As I reach it, the guard turns to look at me, his eyes widening. "You," he shouts. The train is starting to move again. I open the door and leap off just as the train chugs away. Pain shoots up my leg. The guard is hanging out the door staring at me, baring his canines. Chapter 17. No one seems to notice my awkward tumble out of the train. I push myself up on the stone platform, putting my weight on my good leg, and dust myself off. The train station is made of glass, like a greenhouse, and lit with golden lamps. A clock tower rises from it, and I mark the time as 1:05. The large clock face is cracked, maybe from the war 15 years ago. No wonder most humans abandoned this place. Up ahead, a few people hurry through the station's open archway to carriages waiting on the other side. I hop on my good foot, one hand on the glass as I exit the station. The town built up around the train station is small, with a cobbled road that passes between shops and shuttered homes on either side. The shops are closed for the night, the windows dark. But down the street, I see the lights of a tavern, the sign hanging above the door creaking forlornly in the wind. A few soldiers linger by the station, and my spine stiffens at the sight of their blue coats. I try to disguise my limp as I walk. Clenching my teeth, I mask the pain racing up my ankle. When I glance to my right, my breath catches. Between two shops is a view of dark, empty fields, and deep in the fields stands a gallows. 5 silhouettes swing from ropes under the light of the moon. Fear settles into my bones. This is the true face of the Fey occupation, these bodies swaying above the grass. For a moment, I wonder if one of them is Freya, and dismiss the notion. These bodies have been there for a while. They look stiff, and the faint scent of death carries on the wind. I shiver and hurry on. Based on the time, the others should be here soon, coming from the other side of the town square, not from the station. Slowly, I make my way to the tavern, where warm lights beam from the windows. The outside is painted black with golden stars, and the creaking sign depicts a painting of a headless woman. This must be the meeting spot. I'd heard them saying the name of the location was a place called the Silent Woman. As I get closer, I survey the layout. An agent should always have an escape route. The tavern has 2 arched wooden doors inset into a stone building. Oak trees grow around the side door, twining together above the entrance. I wonder if it's a kitchen door. Behind the tavern is a stable. Passing by, I glance at the tavern's warmly lit window. A black cat sits on a stack of books, flicking her tail back and forth. I don't notice much else because I'm not stopping to linger. Mentally, I'm racking my brain for every detail of the map I memorized during the briefing. I'm fairly certain they'll be coming from the southwest. Once I get past the town square, I take a left onto a dirt road with nothing but a few scattered homes and fields stretching into the darkness. I move slowly to avoid putting weight on my left foot. At last, I leave the houses and the village behind. Out here, stone walls surround patches of farmland, and wildflowers line the dirt road. Fear crawls into my stomach. Worries that I'm too late, that they already got here before I arrived. That they've been ambushed, taken. Desperate, I search for a sign of them in the darkness. Minutes crawl by. Then, I see them at last, a trio riding toward me. Relief washes over me as I recognize Freya's auburn hair, and as they ride closer, Raphael and Arzel's bright white shirt stand out from the shadows. Raphael leads the way. In the shadows, his pale eyes pierce the dark. When he's only 20 feet away, his horse slows and his jaw drops. He dismounts and strides toward me.
Pixie Princess.
A line forms between his eyebrows as he stares at me.
Nia, what are you doing here?
I had to warn you. I think you might be stepping into an ambush. Freya and Arzel move their horses closer. How did you get here before us? And how did you end up in this dress? Freya asks. What the fuck is happening?
Did I hear the word ambush?
Asks Arzel. I look back at the main road but don't see anyone. I heard someone talking about an ambush and Oliver, and since there's nothing else around here but the Silent Woman, I thought the ambush might be meant for you. Raphael frowns at me.
What do you mean you overheard someone? Who were you listening in on when you were waiting for us in the woods?
I swallow hard. It's tough to explain.
Try.
It's just something I overheard, I say firmly. That's all you need to know, but if it's true, your life could be in danger.
The hilt of Raphael's sword gleams in the darkness.
Fine. We should at least check what we're walking into. Freya, can you slip ahead to check the tavern's stable? Arzel, circle around the building. Have a look in the windows, the roofs, the shadows. Search for anything that doesn't quite seem right and make sure no one sees you.
Without another word, the pair ride off into the darkness.
Once we're alone, Raphael folds his arms, his penetrating silver gaze searing me.
What is it that you're not telling me?
As the wind rushes over the grass, I breathe in the faint scent of wood smoke and wild roses that grow along the field's edges. Sometimes I hear voices, I say at last. I used to assume they were nonsense, but occasionally, the things the voices say come true. He lets that sentence float between us for a few seconds, the silence broken only by the grass rustling in the breeze and a loud snort from his horse. At last he says,
Okay, tell me more.
When I was waiting for you, the sergeant cornered me in the forest. Raphael's expression hardens, and he shifts closer.
He what? What happened?
I shake my head. Nothing. He was easy enough to get rid of, but as it happened, I heard a voice in my mind, a voice that mentioned an ambush in Aliver. And I also heard a sentence just before the sergeant said it out loud, like I was hearing the future, maybe? I don't know that the bit about the ambush was accurate, but I didn't want to take the risk of ignoring it.
A disembodied voice in your head warned you about an ambush in Aliver,
he says levelly. Frustration tightens my chest. And he mentioned a traitor, someone called Varys. Raphael's eyes open wider.
How did you hear that name?
I literally just told you how I heard it. He studies me.
His name is confidential. Only I know it. Not even Arzel and Freya know it. Varys is the person we're supposed to be meeting.
I could hear the future then. The sergeant's thoughts said, Aliver will be a bloodbath again tonight after the ambush if that traitor Varys can be believed, I tell him. It doesn't seem like a good sign, does it?
No.
His gaze slides down my body.
What happened to your leg? You were limping when I first saw you, and you're favoring your right leg.
I sprained my ankle, jumping into a train car from the roof.
You did what?
That's how I got here, I say. I took the Gobanos train. It was the only way I could make it here on time. But I didn't have a ticket, so I had to board the train through the roof.
Why do I feel like you'll be the death of me?
He mutters and kneels down. What are you doing?
Healing you. The left one, right?
He brushes the back of his knuckles over my ankle where it hurts the most. How does he know exactly where I need him to heal me? The heat of his magic whispers over my skin, a glowing caress that makes my eyes flutter. He slides his hand around my ankle, but the sensation of his magic doesn't stop there. It's a faint kiss of velvet, stroking up my thigh. As his magic sweeps over my skin, the pain dissolves, leaving only a throbbing heat in its wake. I lick my lips, my breath growing shallow. Are you nearly finished? I ask sharply, trying not to think about how it would feel if his hand moved higher up my leg. He pulls his hand away like he's been burned.
I'm helping you,
he says, looking up at me in surprise. It's fine now, thank you, I say crisply, smoothing my dress to disguise my filthy thoughts. He stands and I breathe in his earthy, masculine scent.
Glad it's fine now,
he says quietly.
You're rather tightly wound, you know that?
Because I've been played by you before. Well, we are on a dangerous mission. His gaze moves past my shoulder and I turn to see Freya galloping toward us with Arzel close behind. When Freya reaches us, she's still catching her breath. Nothing in the stable. She draws out the last word.
But,
Raphael says, I mean, absolutely nothing. No other horses. Doesn't that seem odd?
Something seems off,
Arzel says quietly.
I peered in the tavern windows and no one looked relaxed. It's the middle of the night, and they should be drunk off their arses on mead. Instead, they look stiff and tense. It looks like a funeral, not a party. And there are no musicians. Whenever I came here before, there was always music.
Raphael stares at me for several beats.
Okay, we're not going in. It's a trap. Everyone on your horses. Nia, you're riding with me.
The hem of my dress hikes up to my hips as I climb into the saddle. I shift forward, gripping the horse's pommel, the cool night air sweeping over my bare thighs. Raphael mounts behind me, pressing close against me, his body warm and firm. He reaches around me for the reins. I lean back against his chest. Heat radiates from his body, warming mine.
"Let's go," he says, "back the way we came."
He whispers to the horse in Fey, and she takes off at a trot. But we've hardly started when we hear the sound of pounding hooves behind us. Three riders are racing toward us. "They've found us," I breathe. Raphael swears under his breath, "Let's go." He pulls the reins and we take off at a gallop. "Hold on tightly." I cling to the saddle's pommel, and he spurs the horse onto a dirt road carved between two fields. The horse pounds over the soil, its hooves splattering earth in all directions. The twang of a bowstring rings out, and an arrow zooms by. I glance back. Freya and Arzel are keeping pace with us, but the three bowmen are closing in. Our attackers loose another arrow, and Raphael hugs me closer, leaning to the left slightly just as the arrow zips past. Up ahead, something catches my eye, the glint of steel in the moonlight. A drumbeat of dread thumps in my chest. I can just about make out a group of Fey soldiers racing through the darkened fields, ready to block our path. "Do you see them?" I shout into the wind.
"Yes."
But Raphael isn't slowing. In front of us, the Fey soldiers rush into the road, wielding spears and swords. Raphael releases the reins with one hand and draws his sword. I want to pull out my knife, but it's taking all my strength to stay on the horse. A Fey soldier swings for us, and a spear hurtles through the air. I clamp my eyes shut, the sound of metal scraping against metal setting my teeth on edge. When I open my eyes again, we're past the soldiers. A sharp throb on my arm alerts me that I've been cut, and blood drenches my shoulder.
"Are you all right?" Raphael shouts, his voice sharp.
"I'm fine." "Raphael, company," Freya shouts. Glancing behind, I see more riders in uniform racing after us. The one in front has long white hair, and his teeth are bared in a bloodthirsty snarl. Our horses are tired from a day of traveling, and Raphael's mount is carrying two riders. We can't outrun them. Raphael yanks the reins, and our horse veers sharply off the dirt road. Across the field is an oak grove, silvered in the moonlight. We race toward it and leap over a fallen tree. I clench hard to the saddle. Another glance back tells me the riders have followed us. The one in the lead is a few yards away from Arzel, and the Fey soldier raises a sword. Freya pulls her mount sideways to collide with the attacker. The soldier's horse rears, toppling over. To my relief, Freya manages to keep her balance and catches up with us. With his crossbow in hand, Arzel turns. He shoots a bolt toward the riders.
"Get down!" Raphael shouts.
We hurtle into the trees, the boughs arching above our path. I bend over the saddle and Raphael leans closer. His body pressed to mine, we ride through the foliage, the earth and the gnarled roots beneath us dappled with moonlight. A shout rings out from behind until we break out of the grove and race into a field of berry bushes. The breeze whips over me and we straighten again. Two soldiers follow us now, but Arzel is lagging behind. There is an arrow lodged in his side. "Arzel has been hit," I shout. Raphael slows his horse to turn back.
"I've got them," Arzel shouts.
Knocking an arrow, he aims at the Fey soldier with the crossbow.
"Keep going, I'll hold them off."
He looses the arrow as he rides and it pierces a soldier's throat. Raphael curses in Fey and spurs his horse ahead. I turn, eyes wide, as the second rider catches up to Arzel. He's still trying to reload and the soldier has closed the distance. Fear screams through my nerve endings.
"Arzel!"
Freya shouts as the Fey soldier swings his sword. I shut my eyes and cling to the pommel. Behind me, I feel the solid wall of Raphael's chest. When I open my eyes at last, I see Freya fire at the final rider. Her arrow hits him in the eye, and he screams and falls off the horse. But Arzel is no longer with us. I can't see him where he fell, just the silhouette of his horse, riderless. Freya rides at our side, her eyes glassy with tears. Arzel is gone. Chapter 18. The veil glows in the distance, ethereal, silver-violet radiance in the darkness, a pearl beaming from the shadows. It would be gorgeous if I didn't ache all over, if our horses weren't stumbling with exhaustion, and if the sadness of losing Arzel didn't weigh us down with the cold pall of grief. As we draw closer, the veil's hum buzzes in my ears. I need to summon the reserves of my energy to get us across, but I feel nauseated and exhausted. I'm pretty sure I'm dehydrated. I could almost fall asleep against Raphael with his arms wrapped around me. The way he shifts against me as he rides makes me want to close my eyes, and I lean back into the sensual heat and strength of his body. I feel his heartbeat through my back, and my eyes drift shut. After the horrors of the night, it's strangely comforting.
Are you falling asleep on me, Pixie?
For the first time, the term almost sounds like an endearment. His voice is a quiet murmur, and his breath warms the shell of my ear. Of course not. I'm always fully alert.
You might as well rest if you can.
Riders! The sharpness in Freya's voice has my eyes snapping open. I turn to look, but I can't see a thing in the dark.
Where?
Asks Raphael. Following us on horse, she says. I can't see them well in the dark, but I can hear the hooves getting closer. Raphael tugs the reins, slowing his horse to a stop.
We need to dismount. My horse is at the end of her strength. She won't be able to go any faster.
Same here, Freya says. And we're more visible when mounted. Since I can hear their hooves, they might be able to hear ours. Raphael slides off the horse, then helps me dismount. My leg muscles feel so cramped from the long ride that I nearly stumble to the ground.
Silently now,
he whispers, steadying me. We creep forward, leading our horses through the grassy field and doing our best to make as little noise as possible. My heart jumps at every crackling leaf, every snapping twig. The two agents seem to be able to glide along the earth, silent as the air. As we move, dawn starts to break, the sky blushing with coral, blending into indigo. As the sun rises, the pearly barrier reflects the dawn light, rust, violet, tangerine. And then, all at once, Freya and Raphael halt. I take another step and freeze as well. A rumble grows louder, a faint vibration through the grasses, the sound of galloping horses.
They're coming right for us, Raphael says. Let's go.
He releases the reins and slaps his horse, who goes off in a mild canter. Freya does the same, her horse following Raphael's mount. Instinctively, the horses trot away from the veil.
That'll buy us some time,
Raphael says, his voice still low.
Let's run.
I race after his silhouette, desperately trying to keep pace. We run crouched, trying to stay in the shadows, but as we get closer to the veil, it becomes impossible. Now the magical barrier is washing us in a shimmering glow. The only thing still keeping me moving is my adrenaline, which spikes as I hear the hooves thundering over the earth. We make a mad dash through the grass, and the veil hums in my ears, prickling my skin like 1,000 tiny needles. Freya reaches it first and whirls to look at me. Can we cross? No, I whisper. Wait. I try to concentrate on the magic, but I can feel the weight of their eyes on me. They're getting closer, Freya snaps. Come on, Nia.
Let her focus, Raphael says.
I can feel it, the mesh of energy, the thinness of the weaker sections. If I channel my powers at one of them, the veil will crack and let us through. I summon all the energy I can muster, feeling for those vulnerable parts. The veil keeps humming, the hooves pounding closer. If I don't figure this out now, we're going to die at the hands of the Fae. We'll have to go through, Freya shouts. Either we live or we die. We can't afford to get caught, and they're almost here. Wait, I clench my teeth. I concentrate, trying to forget about everything. The people whose lives depend on me, the mission, Arzel, whose death will be meaningless if I don't get us through. Only the veil matters. And its noise seems to grow even louder in my ears. Nia, it's now or never, Freya says. I turn to glance at the incoming riders. They're so frighteningly close, just a few yards away. The leader's eyes bore straight into me, a malicious golden gaze. With a snarl, he raises an enormous axe above his head, screaming a battle cry. My fear nearly paralyzes me, but I use it instead to drown out my other thoughts. I hurl it at the veil, unfocused, directionless. The entire veil flickers, its buzz dying. Raphael grips my arm and pulls me across. I stumble, racing for a few steps through narrow fields crisscrossed by stone walls. An oak forest spreads across the landscape. Coppery light kisses the tree leaves. My body feels frozen, shivering. Icy air stings my skin and my teeth chatter. It looks like spring, but it feels like the dead of January. The hum rises in my ears, and I can see the riders through the haze of the veil.
They rear their horses to a halt on the other side, and one of them raises his bow.
Fuck.
We might be through the magical barrier, but it won't stop arrows. Something whizzes past me, but it's coming from behind. Freya's arrow finds a soldier's throat on the other side.
Keep going, Raphael shouts.
He and Freya are off again. I follow after them, but my muscles feel frozen. I'm shivering violently, my body bitten by the cold. The glacial air pierces my body down to my marrow.
Nia, let's go,
Raphael shouts. My muscles are ice. An arrow from beyond the veil zooms by inches from my face.
Go,
I shout through clattering teeth. Raphael rushes back and scoops me up, pressing me against his firm chest. Enfolding me in his arms, he starts to run. Up ahead, Freya is covering him, unleashing one arrow after another into the misty veil. As we reach the shelter of the forest, I'm shivering against Raphael's chest. He slows once we get out of range.
You're freezing, he mutters.
I used too much magic.
And yet my body feels boiling now, flushed. But I'm not cold anymore. I want to take my dress off. I'm too hot.
You're going into hypothermia.
He raises his eyes, and the rising sunlight catches them as they spark gold.
Freya, wait. She's lost too much heat. We need help, now.
The world shimmers and fades for a moment. When I open my eyes again, it's just Raphael. Golden light dapples his high cheekbones. He's leaning against a tree, holding me close. My eyes drift shut again. And I'm not sure if I'll manage to wake, but I don't mind either way. He's carrying me against his broad chest now, moving swiftly like I don't weigh a thing. What a strange thing to feel safe with Raphael. It stirs a memory from long ago, something I'd tried to forget. Chapter 19. The world is rocking up and down, pitching like a ship, violently. I try to open my eyes, but it's too much effort. Ice slides through my bones, my blood. So cold. My body shudders, shaking like a dying leaf in the wind. A voice rings in my thoughts, the sometimes violent sensualist.
I will taste you. Wrap your thighs around me. In a dark, consuming flame, we will burn a comet in the sky.
No violence tonight, then. I sink into oblivion. I'm in Los Angeles, in my childhood bed, surrounded by my stuffed animals. My head feels hot, my throat burns. I just woke from a terrible nightmare, one of a man with black hair and a spiked crown standing before me, a sword in his hand. My room looks scarier than usual, with shadows climbing over the walls. I don't know if the man from my nightmare is hiding in one of them. A cough racks my chest. Panic crackles through me. Mom! I scream. Sometimes she doesn't come when I call. Sometimes she's not at home, especially when Dad goes away on work trips. Now, I'm sure the evil king is lurking in my room, and I'm too sick to fight back. Mom! Mom! Hot tears run down my cheeks. It's hard to breathe. Something is wrong with my chest, and I can't get enough air. When I cough, it's a low, strange noise that sounds very wrong. My throat is closing up, and I'm sure I need a doctor. I want to go into the bathroom for medicine, but if I step onto the ground, the murderous king will grab my feet. Is he the one stealing my breath? Mom! My throat aches when I scream, and no one is coming to help. Dad!
Children need looking after.
Someone's tearing at my clothes, and I want to keep them on. Voices float through the air.
She's not responding to my magic.
Raphael's deep voice has a sharp edge to it.
I'm trying to heal her, but it's not working.
I open my eyes, but everything is blurry. I've taken most of her clothes off. Freya's voice pierces the air. Warm her up, will you? I'm going to be sick again. But Raphael, I don't think you should get your hopes up. She hasn't practiced enough in moderating her magic use, and she unleashed all of it at once. No one can survive such a temperature drop. I want to tell them I'm fine, but I can't seem to move. Maybe she's right. Am I dying?
She'll be fine,
Raphael says firmly.
Well, warm her up then, for fuck's sake.
I will. She will be fine, Freya.
His certainty is unwavering.
Throw more blankets on us before you get up again, will you?
A warm body wraps around me and powerful arms enfold me. The tension in the muscles beneath that smooth, warm skin belies his certainty. A tightness, tautness beneath the surface. Is he naked? Am I naked? I'm trying to stay in the moment, but I float away again. My mind slides back through the years. I'm outside the library in the chateau. For 3 years we visited, and for 3 years I lingered near Raphael, standing where I could hear him and watch him from the shadows. He and his demi-fey friends seemed like gods to me. All aristocrats, beautiful and untouchable. Princes of the chateau. So sure of themselves, I'd skulk in the corners of the library, pretending to read, but listening in to try to understand what they said in fey. Raphael was only ever with them at night, his long limbs draped over the velvet chairs, sipping wine. He was only a year older than me, but he seemed so grown up, sophisticated. I wondered how it would feel to be that relaxed and comfortable with myself, to let the ever-present knot in my stomach just melt, to smile with ease. Raphael was a little more serious than some of the others, sometimes contemplative, dreamy, but never nervous. It felt like an ache in my chest to hear their camaraderie while I stood by myself. I wanted to be one of them more than anything, like the gorgeous demi-fey girls who hung out with them, flirting and teasing them. It wasn't until our third summer that Raphael spoke to me. I was 17, hanging around the library, hoping he'd show up. One night, when he wandered in alone, I could hardly breathe. He smiled at me. It felt like I'd been raised in the dark, and for the first time I had sunlight on my skin. He asked what I was reading, and I talked for far too long about my favorite poet, who died by drowning, then rambled on about how his wife had removed his heart, saving it before his body burned on the funeral pyre. Raphael's eyebrows rose, and I remember my cheeks heating. Then he asked me if I wanted to meet him the next day. I was so unsure of myself around him, I almost said no. But I managed to nod, and the next day, I followed him through sun-drenched fields. He told me about the history of the chateau, that it was called Douloureuse Garde, a sorrowful fortress. During the Hundred Years' War, the English army had massacred everyone in the castle. Back then, they called those massacres the chevauchées, the harrowing, scorched-earth raids of the English, the kind that led to the capture of Joan of Arc. And after the chevauchées, only one person was left here. The Viscount had hidden in the dungeons while the rest of his people were slaughtered. He stumbled up the stairs to find the stones of his castle bathed in blood. So it became the Douloureuse